Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave. Oh, my goodness. Where do you start? It's Tuesday when we're recording this. We're doing the show live on February the 7th, 2012. And, man, what a day. It's a beautiful day here in Baltimore. It's UB Blake's birthday. God rest his soul. We miss him so much in Baltimore. And it's a really special day. Not only music-wise, we've got lots of great treats for you, but also Kevin Tony is my special guest. And I cannot tell you how thrilled I am, not only because of the magnitude of his career, but also because of the fact that he has written a book that is so astounding. I was literally wondering for years what I would tell my son when he got to be a teenager about what it means to be a man. Kevin Tony has told me, not only biblically sound, but from personal experience. Wait till you hear of Kevin Tony's journey when he speaks of the virtuous man breaking the men's code. I'm so excited. I can't even tell you. I've been doing interviews since 1976, and I think that I might be more excited about this than any of them. He's going to be with us next hour. We're going to have lots of great music in the meantime, including Zoot Sims and the All-Stars, The Red Door, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Amor.
dear God, I love that woman. Jackie Ryan, who I got to know a few years ago, and we've kept in touch. Hopefully she will be on the show. She was on Cool Jazz Conversations with Joy and I a couple of years ago, and man, is she world class. What you heard is from Doozy, her 2009 CD, a double CD, by the way, which was number one on the jazz charts for 7 weeks. I am just amazed when I see that, because I've heard various people say when they heard that, who? When you hear her, you know what you just heard from Doozy. Two songs, actually. Brigas Nunca Mais, Quarrels Never Again, an Antonio Carlos Jobim and Vinicius de Moraes song, and also a Felicidad, the happiness, originally from Black Orpheus, that Jobim and de Moraes worked on. And man, does Jackie Ryan have a heart for Jobim and all of his contemporaries, because Jackie's dad was an Irish tenor and her mom was Mexican, so Jackie would hear different cultures growing up, and her mom would sing Mexican folk songs. So Jackie really has a heart for anything that is akin to what she heard when she was a little girl. She just gravitates so well to singing in Portuguese, which you just heard, and man, I just can't say enough about the international quality she has. When you go to JackieRyanMusic.com and see the accolades, you know. And after you've just heard her, you know even more. Weather Report, Birdland, from Heavy Weather, 1977, considered the best fusion album possibly ever. Joe Zawinul, of course, Wayne Shorter, Pastorius on that bass, Lord have mercy. Manolo Bandrina and Alex Acuna doing their thing. Birdland, one of the more popular songs in contemporary jazz in the last, 30, 40 years or so. Just amazing. A tribute to that wonderful place in New York that we're all dreaming of going. All of us in the chat room. Gracious, it's lively today. Linda, Debbie, Matt, Griselda, Norman. It's amazing, and it'll get even more so because Kevin Tony is coming our way at the top of next hour. Just want to let you know, from 1952, we heard Zoot Sims and his All-Stars, George Wallington, Al Cohn, Kay Winding, Art Blakey, and Percy Heath doing their thing, The Red Door. Zoot Sims, what a fascinating character he is. U.S. born in California. Tenor and soprano sax man, and child of vaudevillians, so he heard a lot when he was growing up. One of Woody Herman's four brothers, worked with Buddy Rich, Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw, Stan Kenton, and got the name Zoot early in his career when he was working with the Kenny Baker Band out of California. Originally born John Haley Sims. Born in October of 25, died in March of 1985 at the tender age of 59. Gulping here. Don't like to hear about our jazz brothers and sisters who have passed on early, so we won't talk about that anymore today. Let us continue our conversation about Kevin Tony, shall we? Oh, my. Now, I will say to you that Kevin communicated just a little while ago on Facebook. He will be here on time at our Eastern time, 2 o'clock hour, where he is in California. It's 3 hours earlier. So we were talking about three of the tracks that he sent to me, and I said, okay, it's up to you which one you want to do during our hour. And he said, let's just move as the spirit does. I love that. So I made sure that I changed my agenda for this next tune, and we're going to dip back a little bit to 2001 from Strut, shall we? This is Kevin Tony on the keyboard with Ronnie Laws. Let's just do that. Passion Dance on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you.
day. Climb into bed. Good night to these questions that fill up your head. Now you can fly on the wings of the night by the light of the moon. Close your eyes. Sweet dreams, my angel. Sleep tight, my child. Sail through the dream. That's where wishes come true. I'll meet you on dawn's morning light, my angel. My angel, can't wait till you wake up. I can't believe how you've grown. And when you get scared, you won't be alone. My love goes with you wherever you fall, and there may be distance, but we're never apart. Sweet dreams, my angel. Sweet time, my child. That's where wishes come true. I'll meet you on dawn's morning light, my angel. Oh, my angel, good night. Oh, morning light. Sweet dreams, my angel. Sleep tight, my child. Sail through the blue. That's where wishes come true. I'll meet you on dawn's morning light, my angel. My sweet angel, good night. Sleep tight, close your eyes, and tomorrow I'll be there by your side. Can't wait to see you smiling, my angel. You are, and you'll always be Daddy's little one, Daddy's little one. Good night, angel.
Well, we're all gulping just a little bit here in the chat room hearing that beautiful song, an early Valentine's Day gift, if you will, for Daddy's little girl. Oh, my gosh. Couple of people were stumped as to who that was. That was the magical voice of Gerald Levert. Oh, it's so, so strong still. He passed away in 2006, and actually, that's when this CD was released. It's Jim Brickman on piano from Escape, My Angel, the name of that track. And I was reading because I hadn't kept up with it because some things you just don't want to keep up with. We had thought initially that Gerald passed away suddenly at the age of 40. He had just talked to Tom Joyner and the crew that morning, the morning of November the 10th, 2006. So, of course, it took all of them in total shock because everyone loved Gerald so much, and they thought it was a heart attack. But we came to find out that Gerald accidentally, because he had pain in his shoulder and also his Achilles heel, he was taking a couple of prescription meds with over-the-counter stuff, and it just was an accidental death. And man, I know that Eddie Liver, I think about Eddie Liver so often because he's lost both sons, and just to know how much love there is in Eddie, all of us who love the OJs through the years, and then we love Gerald and Levert and LSG, and then just to think about how Dad and Mom view their precious sons being gone. Man, woo! So when you hear a song like that, My Angel, it just makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Yusef Lateef, we heard. 92 years old this year, Dr. Lateef. From 1961, from his magnificent album, Eastern Sounds. That was the love theme from Spartacus. I just love that so much. Flute, oboe, tenor sax, Yusef Lateef, a visionary who still is, I'm so happy to say, still with us. Barry Harris, we heard on piano. Ernie Farrow on bass upright, and Lex Humphreys on drums. This was the significant album where you understood where Yusef Lateef was coming from, his view of jazz as world music, and how the different instrumentation, which some jazz folks would never even dream of playing, and Yusef Lateef is a multi-instrumentalist, not only in the traditional sense of the word, the instruments, but also some instruments that no one has even heard of, including koto. So I wonder if he and June from Hiroshima ever got together to discuss that. That would be some kind of pairing. Yusef Lateef, and one of two tracks from Eastern Sounds that had movie music on them, the other from The Robe back in that day, too. Kevin Tony, I was going to play a track that we originally had thought maybe would be a cool track to play in the hour previous to him coming on the show, but he might decide for that track while he's with us in the next hour. What we heard instead was Passion Dance with Ronnie Laws from Strut 2001, and we'll hear more Kevin Tony music and hear what he's been up to. You talk about a changed individual, Huss. Let me tell you something. What you're going to hear from Kevin Tony is enough to make your life change this day. And if you're not hearing the show live, when you hear it in the archives, you will be wondering about this interview for a long time, I promise. From Baltimore, our buddies, the Joe DiCara Group. This is from 2005, and actually, many of us like to think about this on an everyday basis, but Joe and company sort of encapsulated what we think. From Kaleidoscope, this is Perfect Day on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. You'll like this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Man, there is nothing like a classically trained piano player. we were all chilling to that so much. Kevin, Tony, and Kings from Lovescape from back in 1994. I was trying to convey to Kevin and a bunch of other folks, too, that when WSMJ was in existence, the former smooth jazz station that was in Baltimore, whenever there was a Kevin Tony song on, there was a collective, wow, all over the radio station, because there's just something really special about the way that he plays. It must be that Detroit thing, because that's where Kevin was born, based in L.A. now, but there must be something about the soul and the classics combined that create that kind of mystical jazz. Kings, certainly a title that really does fit the bill as far as that song is concerned. Just wonderful. And what a career this man has had. You'll hear in the next, a couple of minutes or so. I'm expecting him any time. It's just about a minute before the hour. Let me tell you who else we heard. I know that Norman Woods, a.k.a. Inside, our former guest, was intrigued by this. Corinthia Cromwell is a Baltimore-based saxophonist, and she has been doing her thing for a number of years. She has a CD out called Peace of Mind, and that's P-I-E-C-E and P-E-A-C-E, Peace of Mind Outside the Lines. It's half gospel jazz, and half jazz, and just really amazing work. Who you heard on that track? Nature Boy. Yes, that Nature Boy was Cyrus Chestnut. So you know that there was some magic in the studio. It's as if Nat King Cole came back and said, you know, if we were to have a sax and a keyboard here, this is the way I would do it. Man alive, that is some choice stuff. And you will find Corinthia Cromwell at her website, corinthiacromwell.com. Joe DeCara Group, also Baltimore-based, although Senior Joe, there is a younger DeCara. Both guitar players, Joe DeCara did a lot of work when he was out in Hollywood. Matter of fact, he worked on some theme songs. One of them was The Love Boat. So he decided to come back to Baltimore to make sure that his dad was being taken care of, because his dad took ill. And there's just a tremendous amount I could tell you about both Corinthia and Joe, as a matter of fact. But I'm just going to hold off on that, because I really do believe that we're going to get most of the people that you have heard so far on the show coming up on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. One person in particular I can tell you about, set for the first day of spring, which I believe is March 20th, is Ken Navarro, who has a brand new CD that you can hear a little taste of if you go to kennavarro.com. And also in the next few weeks, we're going to have two of the members of Afro Blue that you heard from the sing-off. So keep that in mind. So here we are. I thought that maybe I would talk it up so that by the time our guest Kevin Tony arrived, that maybe he would be here. But let's turn our attention to something, shall we? Let's play another track, maybe a shorter one. This is, let's see what we'll play. I'm just looking at the shorter versions, Conversations with My Father, and that's sort of an addendum piece to Kings. Let's do that. This is Kevin Tony on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Everyone is absolutely spellbound in the chat room. Oh my, this is pretty rare when it happens, when everyone is saying the same thing, that this is a breathless piece of work. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy and the amazing Kevin Tony, Conversations with My Father. And now it's time to give to you. You know what? Renaissance Man does not come easily to my lips, because there aren't a whole lot of Renaissance men, but this man is. Conductor, arranger, pianist, composer, author, philanthropist, mentor, Kevin Tony, everybody. Kevin.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Trish, and just good day to you and all your listeners out there and wherever you may be.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're based in Baltimore. I'm doing my show here, and I'm looking at the chat room, and honestly, I've got Texas, I've got California, I've got somebody from France listening, and then there's a whole bunch of people that are nameless. They don't want their names out there or their locations. So we've got them globally, babe.
Well, look, we love that, because, you know, God is global, he's universal, he's everywhere, and that first piece you played there, as I listened to it, it brought a lot of emotions and reflections to me as to, you know, why we're going to be talking, what we're going to be talking about today. So God is indeed great.
Well, and it's funny, Kevin, because you had written to me just before the show started last hour, and you said in answer to a question, you know what, let's just go as the Spirit leads. Let's see what song I'm supposed to tell you gets played during the time that we have together. So I thought that I was doing it correctly in making sure the music was flowing this last hour. And then I thought, okay, the Kings is ending, so let me play something else by Kevin. And it just hit me that I should be playing Conversations with My Father.
That's where it all starts.
That's right.
What we're doing. So when we start our day, we want to have those conversations, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. How, Kevin Tony, did your conversation with the Father start? Because this is a pretty serious change in you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it started for me, Trish. It really hit home, about seven, 8 years ago, and my wife had discovered that I had an affair. I was involved in infidelity, and my wife had discovered that, confronted me, and I knew at that point, even though, of course, I tried to do everything to deny it, and to cover it up and try to find all kinds of alibis, that, you know, God was really talking to me. Something was going on. Something was changing, because I knew even while I had the affair and while I was, you know, sneaking around and doing all the things that people do to try to disguise and hide what they're doing with that type of behavior, that I didn't want to leave my wife. I didn't want to leave my family. But yet, of course, you know, and we'll get into it a little later, you know, I continued, you know, that effect became like a snowball effect. But anyway, my real crossroad came when I had the conversation with my wife. She confronted me with it. I denied it. And then she asked me to leave the house that same evening to think about, you know, what I want to do. And so I did. I left the house. I went to a nearby hotel. And believe me, when I got to the hotel, I was still empty. I was dry. I had no idea what to do. I think I was still thinking of other ways. How can I still lie myself out of this? There must be something I can do. I went to bed that night in the hotel, just empty again. So I woke up in the morning, and right before checkout, Here's my big moment. I called a friend of mine named James Newton, And I had tried to call him, I think, a day before to use him as an alibi. Because I always kind of thought that, he, in fact, he was my alibi when I would go away and be involved in my affair. And I used him as a reason, you know, that I'm going to play music or go, you know, do something in my industry. So anyway, I reached him on the phone, and this is what he said. I told him, I said, James, look, I'm in trouble, man. You know, I tried to call you before to cover for me, but everything is okay. I was even lying to him at that point, right? So here's where God jumps out big time. So James told me this. He said, Kevin, look, even if you had to call me before, I couldn't have covered for you because I've been where you've been before, and I lost my wife. So if you love your wife and your family, fight for them. What, are you near a Bible? So that's what he said. He gave me the charge, and he said, fight for them. I know your wife loves you. You know, she's been with you through the thick and the thin, and I know you love your wife. Now, do you have a Bible? So, and, of course, I'm in a hotel, and, of course, every hotel has a Gideon Bible.
That's right.
And God put me at the right place, right? So,
right.
And it, with the right person. So, anyway, James takes me through, he said, look up Proverbs. He took me through Proverbs 5, chapters 5, 6, and 7, where it talks about, you know, God's rules and the commands about adultery and the consequences of it. Took me through that. Then he took me over to the New Testament, to 1 Corinthians, then some things in Ephesians 5, where it talks about just really what God requires of man and woman in marriage.
Right.
And I read these things, you know. And, of course, you know, that right away didn't do it. It wasn't like I read those, I'm changed. No, but it got a light into me. And then he went further and just said, look, Kevin, I know you're going to need some help. I want you to call this minister. And so he led me to a minister. And at that point, the minister led me to a counselor, who was this guy was the ideal person, essentially, and he was a practical man, you know, as a marriage counselor, and he was a man of God. So he was able to use both aspects of it. But really, that was my turning point, you asked me. My conversation with God came that night and in that morning, and at that point, I had a choice when I came back home. I had a choice to come back to my wife and say, okay, well, I'm going to leave, or, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to leave, I'll break up the marriage, or I'll break up my family. I had a choice of doing that, of coming back, saying, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do whatever's necessary, and that's begin my conversation with God.
Mm. It took an awful lot of courage for you to get to that point and to grow into what God's will was for you, and then to have the presence of mind to think, and I thank God for you, Kevin, because honestly, I didn't know what to tell my son as he was growing up to be a man. He'll be 20 in April.
Yes.
Now that I have the virtuous man breaking the men's code, now I have something to give him besides the Bible. We go to church every Sunday, and he's really being fed. But this took some courage for you to not only bring forth your personal journey, but to say to other men, we were lied to all our lives.
Yes, yes. Well, it did take courage. I mean, you know, look, the easy route would have been this. And this is part of the men's code. You know, the men's code says, well, first of all, the men's code says, many things. The men's code is really any reason, rationale, or excuse for a man to have relationships outside of his God-given relationship that God gives you with your wife. And any reason that you can think of, again, to go outside and have relationships, to practice infidelity, and to live that life, you know. And, you know, again, I did that for a number of years. I mean, I did that throughout our marriage in various disguises. I think I'm sure of it. When I had my affair that my wife discovered, that at that point, and this came up in our counseling, that I had really at that point just really totally disrespected the marriage, and I didn't care anymore because eventually everything I was doing led to the fact that I wanted her to know, or I wanted other people to know. And so that's, you get to a real bad spot when that happens. But, yes, you know, answering your question about men being lied to, yes. I mean, what it is that unfortunately for us, the bad news is this, is that we, like, for instance, I got my men's code of how to treat a lady or what to think about a lady, and I got that from my father. It was passed on to me. I got my men's codes first from my father, who was only really passing down what he had probably received from his father, from generation.
Right.
Okay, so it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
That men, and so men, we bought into this. And then so we start at this thing, we start seeing these men's codes at a very early age. Sometimes it's subtle, and in today's market, with what we have available to us with the DVDs and, the internet, it's very blatant that you see what the men's code is.
Mm-hmm.
And so in buying into that, then we are lied to, and we begin to believe those lies. And my book talks about really these lies. I call them misconceptions, the men's codes. What happens is that we buy into this, and we bring this baggage into our marriages, and then we as men struggle with letting them go because we know that we're not supposed to bring that in, or we know that we're not supposed to go back to that. We're supposed to clear that out, and we did that maybe earlier in our life, but once you make that commitment, that not only is that a commitment to your wife, but more importantly, it's a commitment to God.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we break those things, we're headed for trouble sooner or later. But, again, the book talks about really the struggles that men have, the struggles that I had in letting go of those, and also just how do we change that thought, and how do we change that thinking? What tools can we use to make those changes, which, take time? And let me just mention this to you, too, and to the listeners out here, that, again, my conversation with God took place over a period of five or six years.
Mm-hmm.
Having conversations. So it wasn't an overnight change. I'm not going to say by any stretch of the matter that, I was exposed, I got caught, and then all of a sudden I changed. No, it wasn't like that. I tried to hold on to as much of the men's code as I could, even during counseling. So I had to really be broken down. God had to really humble me and take me to a dry spot. He had to take me to an area where, again, it was dry. He took away the gigs, he took away the record deal, took away
everything. Wow.
Everything, anything that I thought that I can do, that I did because I was talented or whatever the God gifts he gave me, he humbled me and showed me that it has nothing to do with you. And he gave me a long period of time to think about this. And so this is where my conversations with God came from, and this is where the book comes from. I can just say that The book is a product of me having those conversations with God, prayer. I was in such a dark place, Trish, not knowing, what was going to happen. I mean, I think my biggest fear throughout this, which became my biggest joy, and I know was my biggest strength, is that I really love my wife. I really love my family. And I was fearful, even though I was wrong, of losing her and everything that we had built together, knowing that the reasons that I married her were out of genuine love, compatibility, and just the joy we had there. Anything else was extra, okay?
Yeah.
In the good times and the bad times. So it was a process. It was a process of, let me go further, the process after that, after we got counseling and we started going, it wasn't like I wasn't even, you know, I began to want to read those Bibles. In other words, I went back to those verses that James told me about to try to study them. Because now at this point, I knew that God had got my attention. And I knew that, wow, I really need to change. And I need to really change the way I think about things. I remember talking to my counselor, and that's one of the things that I said in the counseling, as he revealed things and, you know, he refereed us, so to speak, you know. He let her speak, he let me speak, and, you know, she had to shut up, I had to shut up. And it dawned on me before I can even get through that process and make that work. Which, by the way, we were in counseling for 1 year, just about every week.
Mm-hmm.
And our counseling was a matter of the both of us going, you know, together. And then he also did separate counseling with us. And I'll get to that a little later, but I want to just get on the point that, you know, the process of me wanting to make changes. I knew I needed to change my thinking, you know, and that's where you have to begin. I knew my heart needed to change. My heart was ready to change, but I also had to change my thinking and my beliefs, and I had to really get that process of throwing out everything that I thought and all the men's code and all the stuff that I had lived on, all those principles, I had to get rid of them.
You had to die to yourself.
Yes, I had to die to myself, absolutely. So, yeah. You know, I started, you know, what was working for, so what worked for me, really, is this. On a very basic level, everything else I tried to do didn't work, you know, and that might even include at that time, and I'm not saying this to knock this, it's just a fact. I remember I was, at that point, I was practicing, like, New Thought religion, which is a very powerful spiritual basis. But I remember in the process of going through it that I just couldn't quite sink my teeth. There wasn't, you know, I wanted an anchor. I wanted a book. I wanted a manual to show me, to show me the rules of what I needed to digest. And the only manual that was out there, that was available, was really the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I began to read everything that I could about how to be a better man, how to be a better father, how to be a better husband. And, you know, I found it in the Bible, you know. I had read the Bible, you know, somewhat throughout my life. I never really sat down and really went through the areas. And also, this brings up another good point, too, about, again, how your earlier statement about being lied to, not only are men not lied to, and women to a degree, but we're really not taught the right with the proper tools. I don't think even in the church even in our churches, some churches are better than others, and I'm not here to knock churches,
that's right.
Not no means, but I'm just saying I don't recall going to Sunday school as a young man getting these principles about how to treat a woman.
Yeah.
What does God say about, you know, getting married, this, that, and the other. There's some general things that you go through, but to really have an in-depth understanding, I believe that those things can be taught earlier, perhaps in a church or Sunday school or, you know, a men's or a young men's group, you know.
Yes.
But for me, I can say that I didn't get the tools early enough where they, you know, could attach on and do anything.
And
so
that's a really good point, Kevin, because honestly, you know, just this morning I was talking to a friend of mine who we shared the experience of being in dysfunctional relationships with men who were broken when they came to us. And we can't fix them. We tried to fix them, but we couldn't. If there was a way for young men, young women, even kids to know that the blueprint, if you choose marriage, like Paul says in the New Testament, you know, it's not for everyone, marriage.
Right.
But
right.
If you choose to be married, know that what Jesus had in mind for the perfect union between men and women is a blueprint that works. And it's really heady stuff. you can't necessarily have this conversation with everybody because you have to have ears to hear. But a man is supposed to be, if he chooses to be a husband, be willing to die for his wife. And therefore, a woman coming into that relationship, if she knows that and there is respect, because there has to be respect, it's easier then for a woman to say, I submit to you because I know that this is the blueprint that will work.
Well, you're absolutely right about that blueprint. And no, it's interesting for me. And again, it's everything is an individual experience. Me and my wife had counseling several times from a minister, and he hit on some real good stuff for us. It really had me thinking. But you know, it's interesting. Again, maybe my minister must have assumed that I may have had a better biblical basis of what's in there about marriage. But as I reflect upon it, and he was a good minister. There were things that I wish I could have gotten earlier, maybe that I could have considered, you know, more.
Right.
And I just didn't get them. Now, I want to just say this, too, that's really interesting, too, because you said a point about this, that it says also in the Bible, in the New Testament, that if a man doesn't treat his wife right, that his prayers won't be answered. And his prayer, you know, his prayers will be hindered. And believe me, I know whether or not a person wants to recognize that there's a God out in this life, you know, most people end up praying or thinking or asking someone, and that someone they're speaking, whether they realize it or not, is God. And, you know, God doesn't answer your prayers, or he doesn't advance you. He doesn't take you to wherever he wants you to go. He'll cut you off right there.
Man.
And so, you know, for me, I had to learn that, you know, the hard way. But the joy of it is this. And what I want to, you know, really say to all the listeners out there, Trish, is that because you mentioned about someone, you know, being broken, men being broken.
Yeah.
I was indeed a broken man. And I should say this, by God's standard, by man's standard, I shouldn't be married today. My wife had every reason to divorce me, and believe me, there really wouldn't be nothing I can do. It'd be like me putting my hands up with a white flag coming out. You write the truth, okay? Because you know it's yes, right, yep, okay. And but by the grace of God, God saved our marriage. God did a miracle in our marriage.
Yes.
And so my message is, and what the book really talks about, is that if God can save our broken marriage, which we were this close, a pinhair from divorce, and that, believe me, that divorce word and thought came up often. And, you know, I praise my wife for this all the time. Knowing that, you know, she sits, and, you know, and we talk about this often, that, you know, she would say several times during this process, I don't know why I'm here, Richard. I don't. This is so hard.
Oh.
It was so hard. But she stayed the course, and so did I. And that, you know, if God can save our marriage, then he can do it for anyone else. And this book is really about that journey, how that happened, and the tools that God gave me and her, too, but specifically me, because this is really about my journey. And so this talks about the spiritual tools and the practical tools that God gave me that are available to anybody who's willing to make that change and willing to make a choice. And I'm really, you know, really just overwhelmed that that's my mission now, and that, you know, God chose me to channel this story, you know, about breaking the men's code.
So beautiful, Kevin. Oh my God! In this day and age, especially in the United States, where we are just heady with recklessness and infidelity and lust and greed and accumulating stuff, accumulating sexual, not even relationships, but experiences. We're dizzy with this stuff. It couldn't have come at a better time because, honestly, and this is a whole different subject, but 2012, I think the Mayans got it half right about things ending. I think this might be the year where it's going to be death to situations that are no longer necessary, no longer important. This is a change year for many people in that they're rethinking about what they're putting as God in their lives. You just said it. God put you through a dry period where there was no work, there was nothing, and you had to pay attention to what he was saying to you because he finally got your head against the wall, and you had ears to hear that.
Exactly. You know, let me tell you this, too. You know, Trisha, of course, I had the choice during that time when God pinned me to the wall and took everything away, including giving me a sickness for about 3 or 4 months that no doctor could even figure out.
Really?
And, you know, and it turned out to be sinus problem, right? which is funny, but it shut me down again so I can think about it some more and really, 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 really get it, okay? What
oh
I'm supposed to do, you know, and so it's amazing, you know, how that happens. But I wanted to make another point here, and so it'll come back to me, though.
Oh, I know it will, because this is God's hour.
yes, absolutely, you know. But look, you know, what I'd like to do here, you know, and I meant to do this at the top of the hour, but I want to just say this, if I could just take a moment here and just say, I would like to just bring us in prayer for just a moment, okay?
Please.
Just a moment.
Please.
Dear God, first of all, I want to just thank you for the opportunity to speak your word and your truth. I want to just thank you for everyone who's listening right now to our conversation, Father, because we know that everything that we get comes from you. Father, I just want to pray here that during this conversation that those who are hurting out there, men and women who are hurting in their relationships, men who may be thinking about having an affair on your wife, or you may be in an affair on your wife, or you're thinking, or you're having problems with communicating, or even if you are even divorced, I just want to pray for you men out there that you will that are speaking today. Well, we'll give you a change of heart. We'll give you hope. We'll give you hope that changes can be done, and God does work miracles. To the ladies out there, I want to just pray that any of you that are hurting out there, that these words and that the story that's told in the book will give you hope for your marriage, hope for your children, that they may grow up and not be shackled or contained by the men's code, and that in doing this too, that I just want to just pray that we begin to all think about how we can set a higher standard for our boys and give them an example and set a higher standard for our girls. So it is in your name that we pray. Amen.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Oh my gosh, you've really ministered to a bunch of people in this chat room who, this is the first time it's ever happened that someone has prayed on this show. So I am grateful to you.
Well, look, you know, it really praise the Lord. Look, you know, I'm a musician. I mean, I'm a musician at heart. I mean, now God has made me an author about a book. But, you know, I think all too often with us in the music business, I just want to talk a little bit about that, is that all too often we as musicians and entertainers don't want to bring that into our work because we feel that's off limits or, okay, now it's all about us. But in truth, as musicians, as singers, writers, performers, we're all about doing God's work, and even in the performance, we're still transcending God's message. And, you know, God never said that, you know, you you have to, you know, the only music that can give my message is just hymns or gospel music. God's music is everything that has a message, that has a feeling, that has the right perspective.
That's right.
I believe when I play my music that some people call jazz or classical music or whatever, new age, whatever, it's God's work because it's his spirit there. And so saying that, I want to just really touch upon an area that was real crucial for me. You know, my book talks about, the beginnings talk about basically how I got the men's code. Because what was important for me, Trish, was, okay, if everybody had, you know, so you can say, okay, so Kevin Tony had an affair. What? What's so big? Well, yeah, okay, and a lot of people have it. But what is important about the book and what I wanted to get and how I wanted to move forward was, okay, yeah, I did have an affair, but now how do I keep myself from going back to that? How did I even think about that? How do I change my thinking? And so where do I go back to find out where that thinking started?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, this is what my counselor helped me to do, is to journal and get me back to the beginnings. And as I spoke earlier, I mentioned that, you know, I got mine from, my story was that I got mine from my father. But I want to talk about something else in the music business, and it has to do with my second chapter. My second chapter is called The Crowning Touches. And I got my crowning touches in Washington, D.C. I want to read just a short excerpt from my book, and this is
sure.
an ideal. It says here in Chapter 2, I came to Howard University to study with jazz great Donald Byrd, who was the head of jazz studies department there. Meeting and closely being around him would give me the crowning touches of the men's code. When I arrived at the music department, Donald took me under his wing immediately. I started performing with him frequently, traveling around the country with his jazz band that included seasoned veterans. Many of them were my heroes, whom I had heard on various recordings. I was in jazz heaven and would have this close student-teacher-mentoring-employer relationship with him for the next 7 years. It was during these formative years that I was able to closely observe his relationships with the women in his life, and they were as follows. Number one, his main lady lived with him in Washington, D.C. Two, he had another woman in New York who took care of certain aspects of his personal business. Three, his woman in California managed his music business activities. Four, he had another woman in Europe. These key ladies always did things for Donald in some significant way. As I traveled and performed with him, I observed that he had women in other cities as well. So the idea that a man could have several women in many places got introduced to me in a big way.
Mm.
Thus, I received indoctrinations into higher levels of the men's code by being around someone whose lifestyle was a major influence on me. Now, look, when I wrote this, by the way, I want to just preface this now, that I'm not trying to rag on Donald Byrd.
Right.
Like with Donald, and I love him. I'm just saying that he, again, most likely, was passing on this men's code from what he observed.
Of course.
And you know what? Sometimes the men's code and doing things that we men do, that we know we don't do, they're subconscious. You know what? It becomes a way of doing things. Even though, you know, it's kind of like you're a Dr. Jekyll, you're a Dr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're with your wife, you're one way. And then when you're away with them, especially in the music business, in the entertainment business, you become the other person. You become another person, and I can relate to that. You know, being married. You know, that was my minutes. You know, I knew that. You know, at home, you know, you're a certain way, but when you get away and nobody's looking, you know, then you're on the wild, and you're trying to do all the things that you shouldn't do. But the story is this, though. You know. Being in the entertainment business, wow. You know, entertainment business is really not designed for married people.
That's true.
It's so much of everything that you don't need, that a marriage doesn't need, that's out there, that you have to be fortified and strong to know that you know, you're not supposed to fall into those traps. Whether
exactly.
it be, you know, and you know, whether it be women. In this case, I'm talking about women here. For some people, they get strung out on the drugs, right? That might be available to them, or they just get strung out on the idea of traveling, you know, or whatever it is, you know. But the road in the entertainment business has many pitfalls that really aren't God-centered. So if you don't have a strong spiritual basis, then you can get swept away. And part of this whole thing here, or for me, I came from that environment. You know, I came from having success. Some of your listeners may not be familiar with the fact, you may be familiar, you may not be familiar with the fact that, about 30 years ago, I lived in Washington, D.C., and I came to Howard to study, and, you know, as I mentioned, with Donald Byrd, and he formed this group called the Blackbirds.
Yeah.
And we had tremendous success. We had hit records, you know, we had gold records, we had number one singles, we toured the country, we toured the world, and, you know, we were exposed to all of these things in the entertainment world that success brings. We're exposed to all the women, you're exposed to drugs, you're exposed to everything. And, you know, you have to make a choice in those things. And for me, my pitfall became buying into the men's code with women and having the desire to have them. And that's something that I had to, you know, I'd gotten so deep into it, Trish. I'd gotten so deep into it as the success pulled me on that I frankly didn't know how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just didn't have, you know. And you know what? Let me just say this. I won't say it's because I didn't have the tools. Now, you know, God always shows up, and he showed up, and you know, during those times. But, you know, I can say I rejected him. I was having too much fun for God. I mean, it was honestly, I guess that's to be honest, I was having too much fun to try to shut it down. So, you know, my scenario is this, and I'm sure it's other scenarios. I'm sure people in the industry can relate to it, that over a period of years of doing and living that lifestyle and having women and, you know, going to cities, you know, again, we, at our height, yes, we had the ultimate men's code situation. There were women in every town. They were lined up. So I fall in love with my wife, sincerely, deeply, and, you know, I want to get married to her. You know, and we go through counseling, but, you know, part of my problem was this, as I look back, and assess it, and, you know, this is something that me and my counselor talked about, is that I had so many years of living the men's code and that I brought so much baggage into my marriage. I mean, there was just no way, the way I was going, that I could have made a totally clean break. Maybe I could have. Maybe I don't know. I didn't, okay, because I just had too much baggage on me.
Right.
And I'm not saying that as an excuse for me. You know, when a man marries or a woman marries, you make that commitment. So, I mean, everything's supposed to heart. But in truth, we all need those tools. We need things to help us along the way. In hindsight, if I can look at it and say, boy, if I could have gotten help earlier, I would have done it. But you know what? We only do things in the time that God gives us to us.
Oh, my gosh. Maya Angelou said, when we know better, we do better.
Exactly, and so, you know what, let's fast forward, okay, bring that to now, is that, you know, God wanted that to happen for me at a time when he wanted me to have it.
Yeah.
So my crash happened 25 years into my marriage, right? Now, the beauty of this and the silver lining of all of this is that, you know, after 25 years my marriage crashes, you know, I'm exposed, and some people might say, well, look, the only reason why this guy changed or want to change is because he was caught. Well, yes and no, you know, because I get it, you know. Sure, when you're caught, you know, you get your hand caught in a cookie jar, you want to change. But then again, I could have went back in the cookie jar. But, you know, again, the silver lining of it is that after that time. That gave me enough time to probably to really appreciate what God had given me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it gave me time to say, wow, is the grass greener on the other side? No, because, you know, it throughout that whole process, it showed me that, wow, my wife had always been there, and through the process, I saw God working with her, and through that situation, and so the fruits of this for me, and the fruits for anyone else could be, that God kept our marriage together throughout all of this things that we were going through, and so today, thank God, you know, we're 32 years married.
That's beautiful.
And we've been through the worst. And you're talking about thick and thin. We've been through the worst. But the silver lining is that now God can really use me. He can really use them because, you know, look, I guess I'd have to be suicidal. One thing I know absolutely for sure, I don't care how tempted I can get. I have this book that I wrote. You know, I wrote this book for me, first of all, because it was really a reminder for me. I wanted to have something that I can refer to and study and get this and have this in a concise way so that I would never go back to what I was before.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, again, you know, God can use me now because, you know, I've been through the fire. And one thing I know for sure, not only will I never go back to that lifestyle and to hurt God or my wife, but now it's my mission now and my obligation to share this information with as many people as I can. It's kind of like this, you know, just it's kind of like this book for me, which is essentially God's word from a spiritual and a practical point of view of, you know, first of all, how to heal, how to make changes, how to pay attention, to, you know, what does God have to say about this? You know, this book becomes it becomes a compass. It becomes a way that I can, you know, again, share this with this. But no, here's what I wanted to say too. Let me back up. This book is almost like a cure for cancer. You know, just think about it. If you had a cure for cancer or something, wouldn't you want to share that with everybody?
Absolutely.
I mean, would you hold that to yourself? You say, you know, would you as a doctor or whoever, you say, well, I found this cure. Man, this could save a lot of lives. No, I'll just keep this to myself. You know, I believe the same way with The Virtuous Man breaking the Men's Code, this book and the experience, I believe that this is a cure for men and how they think about women and how they think about themselves, how they think about their family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cure for infidelity, to put it bluntly. And then also it's a cure to save marriages. It really
is. You know what, Kevin? I'll even add to that. I really believe that with this book, and you certainly have the right to say it is akin to being a book that is like having a cure for cancer, because there is a cancer out there, and that's the feeling. This is really tricky subject matter, mm-hmm. but there's an awful lot of men out there who don't feel masculine anymore.
Right.
And this is the way to shine a light on what true masculinity is all about.
Amen. Yes. Yes, for sure. Absolutely. Being a man is not seeing how many, excuse the expression, vaginas you could, you know, deal with. You know, that
exactly.
has nothing to do with that. Being a man is, first of all, begins within. And knowing who you are, knowing what God designed you to be. Being a woman is being a woman, knowing what God designs a woman to be. Without a doubt, masculinity has a lot just to do with just doing the right things and begins with knowing what God wants you to do, being godly, doing the right thing for your family, doing the right thing for your wife, and doing the right thing for your brother. Your brother means this. Your brother is anybody who's in need. Like, for instance, James Newton, who I told you about, the story about him, when I called him and said, James, I need you to cover for me, he said, no, I can't do it. He was being my brother. He was looking out for me. He was putting me in check. And that's a key point about this book. This another aspect. Men do not, we don't hold each other accountable. We've got to, you know, as men, we got to get out of the club that says, oh, you're doing that. Oh, you're married and you're doing this. You got this woman, you did this. That ain't it. That's not cool. That's not what we're supposed to be about.
Right.
We're supposed to be in check. If we're being godly and doing the right thing on a moral level and on a spiritual level, even if we want to take the spiritual level out just morally, we have to keep each other on check and keep men doing the right thing for the right reasons. And that means, you know, being faithful to your spouse. That means that when you're having difficulty, okay, you know, let's look at it. Sure, a lot of people say, yeah, but I got problems. You know, we don't do this, we don't do that. And, you know, here's what I say to that, because it took us through almost having to face divorce before we did something that we should have did a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this. When your car breaks down and the engine conks out, what do? Do you go out there and try to tinker with it? Not unless you're a mechanic. Right?
Right.
But most of us aren't car mechanics, so what are we going to do? We're going to take it to a specialty. We're going to take it to a car person who knows how to repair that. And so when our marriage clunks out, when we're having problems with whatever, we're having problems with sex, we're having problems with communication, we're having problems with finances or whatever, or our careers or whatever, you know, go get some help. Go to a counselor. Go to a counselor who can guide you through those things. And you know what? Let me tell you, that's probably outside of our belief in God, and that, you know, God could take us through it, because, you know, we prayed through this. And the second best thing we did, I can tell you, was to go get the counseling. And
and
you know, it takes two. And it don't matter. And let me say this to the woman out there. It don't matter that if your husband was the one. Because, you know, by the way, this virtuous man could be flipped around and we could be
talking to this
virtuous woman, which, you know, there's a part of the Bible for that. But, I mean, it could be a flip situation. It's just not only the men. It's just, I believe the men, there's far greater numbers of men. And, you know, that's a whole other story, too. But... Again, I want to say that even though if it was your husband, in this case, like me, who was the guy who was wrong, that don't exempt the fact that you need to still get in there and do the counseling with him. Because here's the other side of the story. Now, ladies, you got to hear this, because I know my wife had to hear this with my counselor. When a man strays and he's having infidelity and he's doing this over a period of time, well, believe it or not, the woman becomes an enabler. Because someone, you know, you have to be able to enable the person to do this. Now, this doesn't mean that you made them do it, but if it keeps going on and on and on and on and you're not doing anything or you're not confronting it, then you're enabling the, you know, it's kind of like a drug addict. You know, you got a drug addict who's getting high on something, and you kind of maybe look the other way, or you're not doing anything. You're enabling this person to do it until you have a confrontation, until you confront the issue, right?
That's a good point.
So that it takes two for one, the woman to not accept that, and not accept that from her man, and to so now that she can become a tool to help him. And let me expound on that more, which I have to bring in and really praise my wife for her being that tool for me. Because, again, my wife had the same choices as I did. She could have easily said, oh, no, you got to go, without any explanation. But there was something in my wife, you know, that, and she said this to the counselor when we got with this person. Well, she said, you know, I know something's got to be wrong. My husband, I know, you know, because this isn't his normal behavior, and something's got to be wrong. My wife, the reason why we're here today is that she believed in my greater good when the glass appeared half empty, maybe all the way almost empty. But, you know,
God bless her.
God bless her, absolutely. And so through this whole process, Trish, she stayed in there like a champ. I mean, let me tell you some things about it. First of all, and she would tell me later that, you know, she knew that if we separated, even though it would have been easy, that it would have been probably more difficult for us to try to stay together, because once you get separated, you get used to the idea that you're separated and you have less incentive almost to kind of like, oh, you know, maybe work at it.
That's right.
So I've got to praise her for wanting to stay with it and for her wanting to fight for her family as well as me, that she wanted to give me a chance to see if change was possible from within. You know, so we managed to do that. We managed to stay in the same household, same bedroom, okay? Throughout all of this stuff. And believe me, it was tough. It was tough for her. It was tough for me. I mean, you know, but really tough for her, you know, that, you know, she was able to endure this. And, you know, let me tell you this about my conversations with God. Once I started reading this Bible, I didn't remember I had a Bible I was reading. So she picked it up for me, and actually my wife gave me this Bible that really all my scriptures came from. She went out and bought this Bible called Every Man's Bible. And the beautiful thing about this Bible is that the Bible has it has a study application section. So you can read stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then you could, you know, it's got a section that explains the verses, that gives you some application. This was
perfect. I love that.
And so I love that. I love that, and I was able to, you know, read, document stuff. Now, so what happened was this for me. Before I go there, let me just stick with my wife for a minute. You know, so she gave me my Bible. Years later, as I started to journal my Bible verses, so what happened is I'm reading. I got real hungry. I said, I want to get this. So I want to read everything. And not only do I want to read everything, I want this stuff to start sticking with me like ribs, you know, like good ribs to a bone or something. And so I wanted to write down the verses that meant something to me, like when I, you know, I read something. And so I began to gather all these verses that, you know, I really was able to get strength and truth and direction. And I would study them, I'd write them down. And I went through this process probably for about 3 years. And then I, you know, after 3 years of journaling and studying, you know, I got this idea through reading another book that I should organize my writings of my scriptures by topics. And so I began to organize them, and this is the second part of my book, which the second part of my book is called His Story, His Glory. It's the Men's Biblical Manual section. And so I began to organize my scriptures into subjects like this, understanding what love is, God's instructions on marriage, being a good husband, being a good father, what does God have to say about divorce, God's catalog of sexual sins, avoiding sexual sin, lust and excess, avoiding temptation, exercising self-control, chapters on deception, dishonesty, truth, God's advice and consequences of adultery. The last two chapters in that section are God's forgiveness and healing, and then making choices and making changes. Now, see, all the things I just finished talking about, Trish, are all the areas that I struggle with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to, you know, align myself up, and like most men, I want to have a manual so, you know, I can go to it daily, you know, which is I go to it now. So after a couple of years, about 3 years in this process, I went to my wife just to share with her, you know, because it was never a thing that I never want to say, hey, look what I'm doing, because change had to be something that she would see. And I had to make changes because I wanted to do them, not for her. I mean, I needed to do them for her, but before I can do them for her and God, I need to do them for myself.
Right, and she had to see you actually living those changes.
Exactly. It could never be a thing where I'm waving a flag. But, you know, out of genuinely wanting to share with her what I thought was beginning to work for me, I showed her this, and she said very encouragingly, wow, this is great, Kevin. why don't you go further now? Now, why don't you write chapter introductions to each of these verses, or scripture sections describing why these verses mean something to you? And then perhaps you can put together a book about this and make it available to your friends or people who may struggle with the same thing you do, which there are tons of people.
Oh, yeah.
And then why don't you call this book The Virtuous Man Breaking the Men's Code? So I'm telling you that my wife named this book.
How about it?
This comes from the mind of my wife. And so, again, here I am seeing... I'm seeing God through my wife, you know. My wife was the object of my hurt. I mean, she was the direct, you know, my bullet went really through her. And here she is, and, you know, and here God is working through her.
God's glory shining through.
Shining through her, you know, to this day, you know.
Oof.
And so it's amazing that, you know, that's the story behind that. But
wow.
Here's another point that I can bring up with this book, too, and about men and women, but certainly from the men's point of view, because this book is about breaking the men's code. Men out there, you got to know that, you know, there's a commandment that says do not kill. So most of us, when we think about this, we think about that when we kill somebody, well, you know, that means they're really dead. We shoot them or they die some kind of way. But you can kill a person in many ways, such as...
Yes.
When you're having, you know, through infidelity, through having affairs, things like that. You know, I killed my wife several times. You know, I hurt my family. I killed my family because, you know, killing is snuffing something out. You know, so I want to say, you know, you can, you know, inflict pain. You can kill your relationship. You can kill your wife. Literally, you can kill her feelings. You can kill her hope. You can kill her dreams. Her love. There are so many ways that, you know, I hurt my wife that, I can only say I have to dedicate my life to trying to eradicate that, you know.
Bless your heart.
And then at the same token, I know, too, that it's also about being able to forgive and move on, which, you know, I got to say for my wife, you know, it took her. And ladies, you should understand this too. You know, forgiveness didn't come quick and easy for her either. I mean, you know, my wife would tell you that I think into probably about our fourth or fifth year, I think she was able to, you know, really have it awash because, you know, so many things would come up, you know. And let me tell you, you know, about infidelity. You know, when you do that, you cast a net out there, and there's so many consequences that some come up sooner than later. Some come up later. Thank God for me with my infidelity that there's no kids, or there were no venereal diseases, or any other physical things that can hurt you.
That's a blessing.
That is a blessing. But of course, the emotional scars, they can be lifelong. And, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, me and my wife can talk about both of our healings and what it took to heal her and what it took to, you know, heal me. But I'm so grateful that my wife has truly been able to forgive me in a spirit of love and forgiveness. And at the same token, I got to tell you this, too. It took me years to forgive myself.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
But
you know, the guilt that you have and, you know, but see, you got to go beyond guilt, too. Sure, you know, you got to go beyond that guilt. Here's the key. You got to go beyond that guilt to wanting to make some choices and make changes.
Well, Kevin, I have to say, though, that, you know, a couple of things. First of all, God really did get you at the time where you could do the most good for him. It's amazing. It's amazing that he took the time to nurture you and believed in you. This is such a powerful anointing that you have on your life now because of the timing, because of the relentless pursuit of him that you gave him, And he finally said, okay, he's ready now. Now your blessings keep coming back to you. And this forgiveness will keep reminding itself to you, because now look what you're doing. I can't believe that you have the wherewithal, that you were given a gift in this whole Man Formation project. I just love this, that there is a group of boys, 10 to 18, who get ministered to because of lessons that you learned being a boy and then a man. So it's going to be ongoing. I mean, blessings are going to keep coming at you and coming at you. And then we get blessed because we're reading something that is nurturing our souls and changing our lives. I mean, you might have saved my son's life.
Well, praise God if we did, you know, for sure. Whew. Amen.
Mercy.
Well, you know, Trish, it's an amazing journey. You know, I think my journey just shows you that, and it says this in the Bible, you know, it's a proverb somewhere that says, many are the plans of man, but it's God's purpose that prevails. You know, when I set out for this journey of life, what I call my journey, I would have never thought it would have been where I'm at now with a book about this subject of all things, right? You know, it's kind of like this. I laugh about it. It's funny, but it's true. I've gone from Rock Creek Park with the Blackbirds, which is our biggest hit, right? I'm one of doing it in the park, doing it after dark, oh, yeah, to The Virtuous Man. Is that the same Kevin Tony? Yes, sir.
Right.
I've gone from my hits, like Aphrodisiac. From Aphrodisiac to The Virtuous Man, a Lovescape. Yes, that's me. I'm that guy.
That's right.
And I'm happy to, you know, guess what? I'm happy and fearless about spreading the word of God. And
well,
I know that's the real power. And that's the real thing that's going to change us.
Yes.
And the other beauty that I want to tell people is this. See, when God changes you too, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden, it's not like all of a sudden I'm a minister or, you know, I'm just waving God's flag. God has me planted right in the areas that that he wants me to. In the music. My music hasn't changed. It's not like the only thing I do is do gospel music now or something. I still do the music that he's gifted me to do, which I believe in many respects is beyond category. In fact, God has really opened me up now so that not only I'm not only just a jazz musician, I'm a musician. I can play any music now I want to.
Yes.
I'm not chained or bound by just doing this style, that style. I can do whatever styles that will reach God's people. And it's kind of like this. God really now is using my music. Now he's using my music to help reach people about the word that he wants me to with this book here. My music is the vehicle now to get people to take a look and listen at The Virtuous Man and to listen to the companion CD, A Heart of Gratitude, which is the song that you played. So now, I realize that God's mission, and my mission, is far greater than being a musician and being, a great jazz musician and all the things that I study and practice for, you know, trying to be the next Art Tatum or the next Herbie Hancock. That don't make any difference now. You know, I'm quite happy being the next Kevin Tony who's going to be doing God's work.
That's right.
The music is a value. And that, in that respect, it frees me up. It frees me up to be all that I can be, and to show people that you can operate right where you are. God sometimes doesn't, when he says change, he doesn't necessarily mean you got to go to a new city, new location. You can do it right where you stand.
That's right.
And that's what I'm doing now.
Bloom where you are planted. Yep.
So it's a joy. It's a joy and a blessing to be able to speak about this book. One vision that I got earlier this year, just a week or so ago, as I get clear that I know that my mission and goal is to reach a million people each year.
Wow.
I want to reach a million men and women through this virtuous man, and my goal is to save 10,000 marriages a year. Now, you got to think big, you know, and I think I can do this. In fact, I know I can do it, you know, God willing. I know God didn't have me write this book for this book to be in a vacuum and just to be in my bedroom or just to
That's
be
right.
here.
That's right.
I know God, you know, with God, God's a big guy. He's a God of, look at the world. Look at the mountains. There are people suffering in their marriages. There are men who are hurting, lost. There are women who are hurting, lost. There are millions of them all over the world. There are billions of them. And you know, these are the people who I'm looking for. You know, these are the people who I want to speak to through my music, through the book, and share that story to give them hope. Because, you know, God gave me hope. I mean, without God, I wouldn't have had hope that my marriage could have withstood that torpedo.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like our marriage was hit broadside with a torpedo, and we were sinking fast. But God brought out his lifeguard. He brought out his helpers, like with James Newton, my friend. He brought out the angels to me in terms of our counselor. You got to get a counselor out there. Do not be afraid of the counselors. They're there to help you.
Right.
He brought in other godly men for me. You know, I began to, all those other people and places that I used to hang out at, the books I try to read and all that stuff, the pornography, all that stuff, that just dropped off.
That Did it? Off.
I had to drop it off. I had to make choices on that. You got to take all that stuff out of your life and start again, start fresh. And you got to trust them. And the only thing I found out that I could trust, Trish, again, was God and his word. Repeatedly, he showed me a way when I thought all else was lost and that there was nothing I'd do. There would be days, Trish, that especially after going to a counseling session where you get beat up real bad, because you should be. That's what counseling is supposed to do. There would be times that I didn't know whether I was going forward or backwards. And, you know, gosh, could we make it through this? And, you know, but, you know, God pulled us through it in such beautiful ways that I can only tell you it was a miracle, because it wasn't what I did or my wife did. And it was just strictly God, God and his power. And that's the good news. The good news is that God's codes are the things that are going to really keep you moving forward with your marriage and your family. And you know, and let's look at it, too. Whether we want to realize it or not, especially in the entertainment business, but I think with any walk of life, Trish.
Yeah, yeah.
Your family and your marriage, that's your sanctuary, too, outside of the church. When you're away from church, your home is your sanctuary, and your family, everything you do stems, how you relate to the day stems from what comes out of your household.
That's exactly right.
And I don't care if you're living there, if you're not married, even if you're single, you know, but certainly for those who are married, which, you know, our world is built on marriage and family. You know, that's how the world revolves and grows. If that base is not right and you're having problems there, then it's going to affect everything you do, everything, your work, and eventually you'll face those consequences. Something will fall eventually if your home, your marriage, your family life is not right, and that's, you know, that I know for sure. But so anyway, that's kind of like what that is.
Well,
did I mention to you too one other thing too? And I'm not sure if we
Well, I'm going to let you go because you've been over an hour, but I just, you know, we love hearing you talk. So I know that your time is important, but go, please go ahead, whatever you want to say.
Okay, well, look, I do want to say this, you know, it seems like I'm just getting another second win here. I've got 15 minutes, and, you know, God is great. So, you know, this is his time. And I would love to share the fact to you that in writing this book, the music came first. You know, I have this CD called, you know, Heart of Gratitude, a.k.a. also known as A Grateful Heart. I remember I wrote this music really 1 year. After about a year into this, I began to write this music because that was the best way I could express my gratitude for God. So, like, wow, you're saving my marriage, you're saving my life. I mean, all those things that God was giving me a chance for a new beginning, I wanted to express it in music. So the music came first. And as I wrote that and I released that, eventually in 2008. And then, of course, all during this time, that was only a lead-up to the book. So the book and the CD definitely go together. And if you get one, you got to get the other.
Absolutely.
And I just want to mention to your listeners out there, too, that you can get this book and support this book on a few different levels right now. It's being self-published by me. I'm the publisher. I'm the publisher of the book. You can get it at my website, which is www.kevintoney.com. That's T-O-N-E-Y. Again, www.kevintoney.com. It is also available at amazon.com. You can go in there and, you know, hit The Virtuous Man or go to my website. You can purchase it from there. It is available at certain retail outlets. Like, for instance, I have a retail outlet in the D.C. area.
You do?
Yeah, Kit Mill Records has the book and the CD. And you can purchase it as a bundle. You can purchase the book as a bundle with the CD, or you can purchase them separately. You'll get a far better deal on your dollar by doing the bundle. And I would like to just also to encourage you this. As I develop this book, you know, God is opening up a lot of doors for me now to speak
I'll
about
bet.
It. Through various situations. I've done a few television shows that are pending for it to come out. I've done a few men's groups presentation where I go speak about the book. I play a couple of numbers from the Virtuous from the CD, and also I get to bring my trio, my new band, the Kevin Tony Three. That I'm about to have a new release come out on soon. And so I'm saying this to say that you know, any opportunity that you can get to not only read the book but pass on the word to your friends and stuff right now. And let them know about it. If you like the book, go up to Amazon.com and give the book a review so that people can
that's
know
good.
More about the book.
Right.
And we'll all be doing God's work.
And isn't it amazing when we finally choose to be obedient to Him, when we finally let Him take the wheel, what kind of blessings and what kind of peace and the desires of our heart that we never knew, that we never thought we could have materialize. Whatever we had in mind for us is nothing compared to what God has in mind for us.
Absolutely. And I will just say this to you two listeners out there, no matter what you do, you know, my thing was music. Remember, what you do is not who you are, and what you do is never greater than what God is. You know, you are nothing without that. You know, when you think you're good or talented or you can do everything well, God can take that away from you just like that, and you'll be wondering what hit you and why are you going through this. Oh, I've done too much for this. Oh, I deserve this. You deserve nothing other than, we deserve nothing more than what God wants to give us. And that, and what we're responsible to as being responsible stewards for the gifts He gives us. When we abuse those, he punishes us. And for me, my punishment was this. I abused my musical gifts. I abused my musical gifts. I began to use my musical gifts for the wrong reason. And when I started to do that and when it went overboard and God tried to get my attention many times, and I refused him, I said, well, not now. Or either, okay, I'll stop now for a minute, and then I'll get back into it again. Then, you know, God shuts you down, and you find out who's in control. So I want to just, you know, if I can leave you with something.
Yeah.
A couple of things. One, it's a verse that says in the New Testament that the workers are few, but the harvest is plentiful.
So oh, yeah.
Workers out in the field, okay, send them out there. Because the work, you know, the harvest is plentiful. That's my mission right now. And make, you know, I want to just encourage other people to make whatever God's calling you to do, make that your mission, to go out there and do that work with your skills. It doesn't diminish anything that you do. And the other thing I just want to just say is that, Trish, I want to just thank you for having the opportunity to speak today. And to share, and I don't know if any other questions that you may have for me, or is this something I didn't cover? Or?
No, you know what? I didn't know if you were going to speak of the music because you know I've got these copious notes about who you are musically, but this was paramount for people to hear. I wanted you to speak about the virtuous man breaking the men's code so much, and I'll tell you this, Kevin, just to show you what a small world this is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let you go because I know that your time is important, but Tony Bunn says to say hello.
Okay, Tony, tell him I said hello. I remember him.
He is now in Scandinavia. He is a first-time dad at the age of 54.
Okay.
And he wanted to make sure he passed along love to you.
Great.
And one of the gals in our chat room, singer Debbie Poole from Baltimore, apparently, you and she met each other back in the day. So
okay.
we're getting folks in the chat room that have had that have met you or have been in association with you, and it's just really important to note that your influence and your manhood. God put you in a space and time where you have affected people even when you weren't necessarily walking in his light. Now that you are, all of those people who have known you,
mm-hmm.
you're going to affect even more than you can believe.
Wow, well, that's pretty powerful, Trish.
I believe it.
Yes.
I believe it. And what song should we do to close our time together?
Well, let's do...
You gave me giving thanks, and you gave me with a child's heart.
Well, let's leave with a child's heart, because you know what? It's with a child's heart that we all must become. We got to become like clay. Once we can become like a child who you can mold, right? Who
right.
you can teach. You can take his hand. You can take his fingers. You could do this. You know, children are eager to learn. They're eager for change. They're at that age. It's with a child's heart that I want to that we must become in order to make some choices and changes, and to be able to fight for our families, fight for ourselves, and you know, do the right thing. So let's leave with a child's heart. That'd be a great one. Okay.
Okay, and Kevin, thank you for so much time. This is beyond a blessing to have spent this much time with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to us doing it at another time, too, okay? We can pick it up, okay?
That would be wonderful, yes. And tell your wife, please give her a hug for me. Send her
yes.
our love, and thank you for all of the folks that you have affected and will continue to affect.
All right, blessings to you. God's blessings to everyone out there and your listeners, and we'll continue moving forward.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yes, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Kevin Tony, what a blessing. And as he finishes his interview, here comes my son through the door coming back from school, and he'll hear the interview in the archives. What an amazing time that we had with Kevin Toney. This is With a Child's Heart on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. everyone safe at home. And both of us safe at home. And all of us safe at home.
My goodness, hearts are so full, mine included. There seems to be a real nice buzz from the chat room, just a good feeling. God seems like he's working some sort of wonderful magic in figuring out what songs to play, because of course you know that everything was overturned because it just needed to be, since Kevin spent a little bit more time, and I just loved the time that he spent. Let us tell you a little bit about Kevin Toney. Now, let me tell you what you just heard is Michael Franks from a gift that my son gave me for Christmas from 1990's Blue Pacific CD, Crayon Sun, Safe at Home. And it seemed to be the vocal that we needed to play after two wonderful Kevin Toney songs. My goodness. Oh, we had heard earlier conversations with my father. Two songs that you heard were Giving Thanks, and that was the song that was right after another one from the companion to Virtuous Man, Breaking the Men's Code. We also heard, I'm just really full right now. What did we hear? See? With a child's heart. My mind is adrift because I was thinking that maybe when Kevin was on with me, maybe we would be talking more about his music. But I think that those folks who have joined us today and folks that will hear this interview that you heard just this past hour, you'll know the body of work he's done. If you don't know anything about Kevin Toney, my God, there's just so much. Born in Detroit, on the piano at the age of 5, at 8, cello and alto sax. Went to Howard University, BA in Composition and Jazz Studies, leader of the Blackbirds, you know the songs Rock Creek Park, All I Ask, Unfinished Business, which got a Grammy nomination, six 70s soul classics with the Blackbirds, back during that very special time in all of our lives, 1982, Special K, Lovescapes, I'm sorry, 1994, Kings, we heard a little while ago, Strut, 2001, not only an important work, regardless of what you felt about contemporary jazz at that time, there was people who were going through different shades of thought about what jazz was, official Winter Olympics music, Strut was. So that was pretty heavy stuff. And then, you know, if you didn't know this, scored two films, Kings of the Evening, Lynn Whitfield, love her, and Tyson Beckford, and the Kinsey Collection. And this was a very cool, I have never seen this, but this is a really cool piece about a couple who assembled African and African-American artifacts. And Kevin knows these folks and still works with them. Matter of fact, there was something that was pretty huge in L.A. over the weekend, and Kevin was again working with some of the folks that really are part of his world now. It's a whole different world for Kevin Toney, as you noticed when he was speaking about the Virtuous Man. Just amazing transformations in other people's lives that he has known, and what he's doing with boys in L.A., this Man Formation Project. I can't speak about this enough. This is L.A.-based for boys 10 to 18. so that they get a glimpse of what it's like to be a real man, not the stuff that they hear in the street, but out of the mouth of Kevin Toney and his associates, a reevaluation of all that men and boys have learned, an overturning of that so that they know what a godly boy and a godly man is supposed to be. Can't thank him enough. Please go to KevinToney, TONEY.com, find out more. Make sure that when you order the bundle is going to be, as Kevin says, your best bet. There's music to accompany the book, and you're going to need some healing as you go, whether you are a man or a woman, in finding out your journey back to where you need to be, especially if your marriage is in trouble. Man, there was a lot of food for thought today. And I'm going to leave you with something. I thought that maybe we'd get to two songs, but I'll leave the one song by Kevin for Thursday, and then we'll have a big Valentine's show next Tuesday, and a very special guest. We'll talk about that on Thursday. I thought I would leave you with this, and then we'll just trail out and let the music sort of take over, and we won't have a close. We'll just end the show that way. I'm going back to my notes here because you need to know something about this man. Of course, you know how proud I am to be in Baltimore, right? And one of the reasons why is because of the rich musical heritage that we have. And one of those people that are part and parcel of the Baltimore legacy is a man who is whose birthday we celebrate today. He's no longer with us. And there's some speculation as to when his true birthday was, whether it was in 1883 or 1887. Regardless, he was born this day, February the 7th, and whether he was 100 or 93, whatever age at the time he died in 1983, what he left us was unbelievable. I'm talking about U.B. Blake, a composer, lyricist, pianist of ragtime and jazz and popular music. Just amazing. One of the amazing facts about U.B. Blake is that he and his longtime collaborator, a person by the name of Noble Sissel, wrote and directed the first African-American Broadway musical, Shuffle Along. That was in 1921. Pioneer in so many ways. Mom and Dad knew that when he was a tiny boy, he had a special promise because he marched in with his mom and dad into the store, got up on a piano stool, and started tinkling away. And the owner of the store said, "Madam, you have a boy of rare talent. It would be sinful not to get him a piano." Of course, Mom didn't know later on that U.B. would used to sneak into the Baltimore bordellos and play piano. She did not have that in mind for him, but he grew up to be an amazing legend and an amazing person who used to be on the Merv Griffin Show all the time and the Johnny Carson Show. You can find U.B. Blake on YouTube videos. They are just incandescent because he was amazing. And we're going to leave you with a U.B. Blake song. Again, thanks to Kevin Toney. What a gift. He has been, he is, and will continue to be. The work God has in mind for him, oh my God. U.B. Blake, from Memories of You, I'm Just Wild About Harry, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thursday, the return of Ron Kearns, and we're going to have a good time, as we usually do. Thank you to everybody who joined us today, including Chris, including Yolanda, and our special Norman Woods, and Debbie, and Matt, and my sister friend Griselda, and Linda in Malibu, and to all the folks who wanted to go unmentioned. Thank you, and God bless you. U.B. Blake.